Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Actually, I thought history was a pretty easy choice. And the reason, but the reason I chose history was very specific because, as almost everyone here is aware, this month, February, is what? Black History Month, okay? It's also referred to as African American History Month, but it's celebrated in Canada and the United Kingdom. And there were a lot of wonderful events this month. I kept seeing them pop up on Facebook and on New York Times and all of that. You see the 106-year-old woman who visited the White House? Wasn't that beautiful? She was about this tall. She probably started out this tall, but she was down to there. And she was sort of holding hands and dancing with President and Mrs. Obama and everything, saying, "I never thought I'd be at the White House or see a black man here." And she was just so much fun, so absolutely beautiful. And there were also a lot of events here in Atlanta, obviously, where a lot of that history took place. So for some of you who may not be up on this, I want to let you know that the celebration of Black History was originally only 1 week long. It started in 1926 officially, and it was the second week in February, which encompassed two birthdays, the birthday of Frederick Douglass, who was the African-American statesman, orator, civil rights activist, writer, an amazing man, and also the birthday of President Abraham Lincoln, who signed the Emancipation Proclamation. So that's why they picked that date. And while the idea started out a little slowly in the beginning, within just a very few years, 3 or 4 years, it became widely accepted and a very popular event, and eventually it became a tradition, especially in the different schools, even the high schools and the colleges around the country, where the many historic contributions of black Americans have been given very little attention up until then. And in 1976, under President Gerald Ford, at the time, it was expanded to be an entire month, the month of February. Now, as you might expect, this is history, all right, with any national event of this size and scope, from the beginning, some people liked the idea and some people didn't. And it wasn't all one race on one side and one race on the other side. Some people of both sides of all over the country felt that black history should just be looked at as a part of American history because we're all part of one country. And other people said we shouldn't be spending a whole month celebrating one race because then the others would be minimized. All right, that was another argument. But personally, I don't agree with either one of those statements. In fact, I think it would be wonderful if we picked all the different months to celebrate all the different races and all the different major groups and all that kind of stuff that we all came from. Because in this country that we all live in, where we are all citizens, it is really a melting pot. That old phrase from the 1800s. This country has been created by a lot of different people with a lot of different ethnic backgrounds. Even though there has been a whole lot of discussion on both sides of the debate, I personally think that celebrating the achievements of anyone, all right, anyone who improves the quality of life for a significant portion of the human race is a good thing, whether we're talking about black, white, yellow, pink. That's me, you know, all these different, you know, different, we're all parts of something. All these people that make up the diverse and mixed races all over the world. Because as anyone with any common sense and any spiritual sense, both of which I found go very closely together, knows, we are all spiritual beings first, besides the way we look like or anything else. And every person everywhere, no matter who they are, deserves kindness, love, compassion, and respect because they are spiritual beings. That's something we talk about in this teaching. And race, along with things like gender and nationality and sexual orientation, those are some very dumb reasons to exclude people or to try to separate people because it's just the way we were born. Now, spiritually, we understand that. Now, virtually everybody in here has heard the phrase, He who does not remember the past is condemned to repeat it. Remember that? Everyone heard that? Not everyone knows where it came from. It was George Santayana, the famous Spanish philosopher. But a much more spiritual or much more optimistic way of saying it might be this. He who pays attention to the past should always be able to learn from it. That's a little more spiritual, and I'll explain why. For example, if we take a look at black history, African-American history in the U.S., we see quite a few people and groups who have had a very powerful and positive effect on every aspect of American society. In terms of African-Americans, because that's what we're celebrating this month, we see brilliant politicians and statesmen, both past and present, like Frederick Douglass, I just mentioned, W.E.B. Du Bois, Martin Luther King, our very own Dr. King. We see women of powerful character and courage who refuse to be held back by either their race or their gender, people like Sojourner Truth, who escaped from the South with her daughter in the 1820s from slavery and went to the North and became a civil rights and a women's activist. Harriet Tubman with the Underground Railroad during the Civil War, Rosa Parks, Coretta Scott King, all these powerful, wonderful women. As of this date, we have, or we have had, an African-American president, Supreme Court Justice, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Attorney General, and most other cabinet positions, and numerous senators and congressmen and congresswomen. We have had African-Americans who are writers, explorers, inventors, astronauts, several, Pulitzer Prize winners, and Nobel Prize winners, all right? In every area of society, from computer science to medicine to politics to religion, to sports and entertainment, to CEOs, CFOs, and COOs of Fortune 400 companies, African Americans are represented. And we should not be looking at these people as exceptions, even though they are all exceptional as human beings. We should be looking to them as examples for our children. And even though there's a ways to go in getting ourselves aware of all of this with all of the races and the way we interconnect, because I'm an optimist, I have to believe that we're moving in the right direction, because that is the way the world changes, one exceptional consciousness at a time. Now, we also have to recognize that no real history of any group would be complete if all it addressed was the positive side. If the only people we learned about were the saints and the heroes, and the only events we remembered were the good ones. Because, once again, we are all human, but we are spiritual beings having a human experience, and we all, because of our humanity, do some things that we may not be proud of. If you look at the history of every single race of people throughout history, you see, represented by every race, genocidal dictators, mass murderers, and just about every evil, if you want to call it that, that you can imagine. People who glorified violence for their own ends, going from Genghis Khan back then to Stalin and Hitler, up through Idi Amin. You can talk about people, every race, every country, every religion, every background you can imagine. So what we have ended up creating is, I love the way Dr. King puts it. He says, we have created a world, he was saying a country, but we have created a world of guided missiles and misguided men. It was a very powerful statement. But for every single person who has misused their God-given talents, no matter who they are, and their intelligence, to misuse or abuse others, for every one of those that we hear about, wherever we try to place blame, there have been thousands and even millions of people, most of them unknown to history, who lived good lives, practicing kindness and compassion and forgiveness, as the Dalai Lama teaches today, and all the other spiritual qualities that every one of us has been given to help their fellow human beings. But what we need to remember is none of these nameless or forgotten people suffered or shared or sacrificed for other people because they themselves were a certain race or because the people they were helping were a certain race. All of them did these things, whether they were known or unknown, because they honored all people. All these people did these things because they knew that God does not belong to any one race. And in a sense, they took their stand because they realized that God has no history. It just is. All right? They knew this. So their connection with spirit was in the present, was completely in the present. That's why there are a lot of stories that we may never know, large ones and small ones. And today I want to share with you a story that a few of you know, but most of you don't. And I'm telling you this story because, in a way, our presence here in this room this morning is a result of one of those unknown or little-known stories. Now, a lot of people don't realize it, but the whole New Thought movement, all right, the whole New Thought spiritual movement in the United States, of which we are a part, owes its existence to a number of people who were born, shall we say, outside the traditional mainstream of society, including, talking about this month, African Americans who were searching for a different religious experience than the traditional churches that they were raised in. Back in the 1800s and in the 1900s, when metaphysical teachings like this one were beginning to take hold, like unity and divine science and religious science, many of the people who came to hear this message were people of color, including people of mixed race, people who were gay, sexual orientation, people who were divorced, and people who were recovering from alcohol and drug addiction. And it makes perfect sense when you think about it, because in most cases, these were people who were being excluded from the traditional churches because they were either considered to be sinners, in the case of the divorcees, or because of racial or socioeconomic discrimination, which existed then as it does now, or because they had different ideas about spirituality than the old guard did, and the old guard didn't like it. So it didn't take long for all these good people who were rejected by their old churches simply because of who they were to recognize that the message that was being delivered by centers and speakers just like this one was a present-day message when it came to spirituality. It wasn't based on old books and old ideas. It was more inclusive and it was more open-minded. You see, they realized right off the bat that we have always taught that we are all one with God. We've always taught that. We have taught that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience and all come from the same one source. We have always taught that there's no sin but a mistake and no punishment but the logical consequences of that mistake. And we have always taught that we are all co-creators with God of our life experience. Now, these messages were not divisive. And they were not discriminatory. They included and accepted everybody, no matter who they were, as they continue to do today. And those people who had experienced discrimination and exclusion from places that claimed to be spiritual but really weren't could tell the difference. They could tell. Anyway, that's the history. Let me get back to our story here. This gets a little more particular for us. Back in the early 1950s, a man by the name of Raymond Charles Barker, who you've heard me and David refer to, who was actually a Unity minister at the time, he heard the message of the founder of religious science, Dr. Ernest Holmes, and he was hooked. He loved it. So he went to see Dr. Holmes in California, and he asked if he could start a Science of Mind church in New York City, where Dr. Barker was from, and Dr. Holmes gave him his full support. So Dr. Barker, he wasn't a doctor at the time, he became one later, went to New York, and he rented a huge ballroom at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. This is a man who liked prosperity, okay? And from the beginning, he and the First Church of Religious Science, which it was called at the time and is still in New York today under a slightly different name, he and this church center were both a resounding success. So every week there in the beautiful Waldorf Astoria in downtown Manhattan, more and more new people from all walks of life came in the door, people who resonated with this message, and everyone was welcome, at least in the beginning. Then one day, after the service, a manager from the hotel came to Dr. Barker and he said there was a problem. It seems, he said, that some of their clientele at the hotel were complaining about the number of people of color who were coming into the hotel on Sunday morning. Remember, this is back in the 1950s. And he asked Dr. Barker if he could do something about it. And Dr. Barker smiled and he said, "I certainly can. Effective immediately, we will no longer be meeting at this hotel. Good day." Good day. That's what he said. All right. Now, and he proceeded to move the Sunday service to Lincoln Center, to Alice Tully Hall, where it was for 30 years. Has anyone ever been there to see that service up there? Fantastic, beautiful. 1,200 seats, totally packed. And as you might expect, once the word got out to what had happened and why it had happened, the African-American community, those who were open to this kind of teaching, began to show up in droves. And one of Dr. Barker's later students, besides Stuart Grayson, who took over from him after Dr. Barker retired, was a man by the name of Kennedy Schultz. Many of you have heard that name or met the man, who later became my teacher and David's teacher. So that's why we're here. That's kind of why we're here. So that's history. And I tell you this story because it is a part of our history. We're not just a group that shows up on Sunday morning for no reason. But I also want you to recognize that this story is not gospel. We don't enshrine the story. It's not carved in stone. In fact, I have heard a number of different versions of this story, but that's the one I like the most. All right? Because I learned it from my teacher, and it supports completely the idea of inclusion that I believe we stand for, and it reflects favorably on the character of Dr. Barker, a man I admire but never met. So even if the story itself may not be entirely accurate in every detail, that's the way I like to repeat it. And if any of you repeat this story, you're going to repeat it the same way you just heard me say it because you heard it here, okay? But whether or not it is historically accurate, who knows? Doesn't really matter. Which brings up the point of my talk today, which I have entitled, Why History is Really a Mystery. All right? So here's my question for today. Whenever I write a talk, sit down to write a talk, I start with a question. And that's what I follow on, and that gets my mind going and my juices flowing, and I come up with whatever it is I come up with. When we choose to celebrate history of any kind, for any reason, whether it's our racist history, our nation's founding or our nation's history, or a religious holiday, that's a lot of history, do we ever really know the truth of what we are celebrating? Even if it's an official holiday or an officially sanctioned celebration. Because whenever we repeat a story or whenever we memorize facts and regurgitate them, which is what we're doing when we celebrate history, especially if it's a story that happened many years ago under circumstances that might have been confusing or complicated at the time with no news coverage, no video, no reporters, no iPhones, and no Facebook coverage, how do we ever get by? All right. How do we know that the story or the collection of stories, maybe in the example of the Bible, we could say, that we are celebrating actually happened the way we are told that they happened? And if somebody else believes a different version, how do we know who's right? The Shias and the Sunnis are killing each other over something both of them think happened 1,200 years ago that they both look at entirely differently. Now, I don't mean that what we remember in terms of history is a lie, but memory is a very fragile thing. The moment after something historic happens, and I put historic in quotation marks, like 9/11, maybe, or Hiroshima during World War II, or very shortly after someone does something that would be historic, somebody invents something, discovers something, changes something, whether it happens all at once, like 9/11, or over a period of time, as soon as it happens, history begins to take on a life of its own. It begins to start moving and changing based on the passage of time and the memories of the people who spread the story, both those who were there at the time and those who were not. And that doesn't even include the people who try to glorify, deny, or change the story for their own purposes. We'll just set that aside. You see, in a way, history is like a giant game of grapevine. Remember playing that when you were a kid? You got in a row and started something here and over there. What started out in the beginning, when it happened, as one thing, very often comes out the other end, maybe years later, as something very different. Now, it may still resemble the initial statement, whatever it is, in some ways, but sometimes some of the important details end up being expanded or twisted or changed or shaped or forgotten or until a person who was there when it started doesn't even recognize what comes out at the other end. So that shows us what history really is. It is fluid. Fluid, which means, scientifically, that it's not nearly as fixed and unchanging as many of us would like to think. Now, and Bill addressed this, this isn't just true about the history of our race or our country or our religion or the world. It's true on a personal level too, right? We all have a personal history, and it's made up of a lot of different parts. Think about it. Everyone in here has a family history. You have an employment history. You call it a resume. That's what you put it down. You have a credit history. We could look that up. We can find a 12-year-old to get into the computers and find your credit history, all right? We have a medical history. We have a relationship history. Maybe we even have a criminal history. I'm sure nobody in here, but there might be some, you know. We are even told by medical researchers that we have a genetic predisposition, which is sort of a genetic history going all the way back to our great-great-great-great-grandparents. But what's amazing to me is how many people not only have a history, they become their history. Their life is made up of a collection of their histories. Have you ever heard anybody blame their bad habits on the fact that my family has always been that way? My family has a temper, you know. My family drinks. My family doesn't know how to handle money, whatever it is. All those things people justify using their family history. Or what about people who lose their job or move to another city looking for a job? They end up only looking for a job in the same field because that's all I'm qualified to do. That's what my resume says I can do. So they look at what they've learned in the past and what experience they have in the past and what people like them have been able to do, people their age, their race, their whatever it happens to be, have been able to do in the past, and that's where they focus their energy and their attention. Even though there are thousands of other possible jobs in thousands of different fields that they could try for, they don't see those as options because their employment history tells them what they can and can't do. Now, excuse me, it's the same with all the things we did in the past that resulted in us being where we are now. Because what a lot of people do is they look at the path they have traveled and they assume that the path was fixed because they can look back and trace it as far back as they remember. But that the direction it has taken, not only that, they also believe the direction it has taken us is the direction we need to continue to go. And that is one of the greatest spiritual mistakes we can ever make. You see, when it comes to who and what we are, especially at the spiritual level, we are not the past being dragged into the present, and we are not the present turning into the future. We are the present creating the future. You get the difference? We are the present creating the future. And if we are doing it intelligently, then we are creating our future out of who and what we choose to be in this moment, and this moment, and this moment, always in the present. That's why our history, however noble it may be or may seem, should never define us, but it should inform us. It should never restrict us, but it should educate us. It should never limit us, but it should ground us. That's why we study our history. Because everything we did in the past, or everything our ancestor did in the past, or everything that was done to them or us in the past, all right, all of these things were done from a consciousness that the people involved were expressing at the time. Now, sometimes the people involved did wonderful things, because they were acting from a higher level. Sometimes they did terrible things because they were acting from a less evolved level. The key thing that we need to recognize is that while we may remember our past and honor it or even identify with it, we don't want to give it any more creative power than it already has, which is actually very little. we have to realize there's a chance the history we have memorized and committed ourselves to may not have happened exactly the way we think it did, even though we can look back and see what's written down and point to pictures and things about how the way it happened. Or maybe the message that the past contains is different than the message other people tell us it should have for us. Maybe it's showing us things we should do differently instead of the same. Because history has a way of exaggerating small things in our past life and ignoring some important things. And if you don't believe me, you don't look at our personal history. Talk to your siblings or your parents. You ever had that sort of an event where there was an event in our past that absolutely traumatized us? We've been thinking of it every day for 30, 40, 50 years. And you mention it to them, it happened when I was 12, and they don't even remember it. They don't even, when did that really happen? Or the things that happened that impressed us and affected us deeply, they didn't even notice. These are siblings growing up in the same house at the same time. I mean, when we're growing up, when it comes to personal stories, none of us has the same memories because none of us were the same person then, and none of us are the same people now, and the evolution from then to now has been different for every single one of us. So why do we think our history is any different? Why do we think that something is true just because we remember it a certain way? Napoleon Bonaparte once said this. I love this. He said, "History is the version of past events that people have decided to agree upon." It's a great statement. It's the history of past events that people have decided to agree upon. And in the case of our personal history, what we call our past is usually a version of events that we have cultivated to make us look good, right? But not always. Some people, you know them, so do I, use their past to support them in being a victim. They do. Some people use their past to justify failure or why they don't have any money. Some people desperately hang on to their past to keep them from having to deal with the present. Whenever we do any of those things, the problem we run into in our consciousness and therefore in our life is that our past becomes our present and our present then becomes our future. That's why we feel stuck. So life moves forward in amazing ways. The world moves forward, but we stay behind, refusing to give up all hope for a better past, as Dr. Barker once said. I love that statement. Now, too many people also allow themselves to be defined by how other people see their past. Dr. Barker once said, "Yesterday ended last night." Which is very, very true. But another way of saying the same thing is the present always has the power to overcome the past. The present always has the power to overcome the past. What we call our history, our collective history, all of us, only exists in memory. It only exists in memory. And a memory is a present thought about a past experience. That's why we need to focus our mental, emotional, and spiritual energy on where we are now and put our best energy into where we're going from here. Because whether we're talking about the future of this country, the future of this center, or our own individual future, I'll tell you exactly where any of it is going to go, and that is, it is going to go wherever we choose to take it. Where else could it possibly go? It sometimes amazes me how many experts on history are so ignorant when it comes to predicting the future. You ever notice that? But it's not really their fault. We'd probably have the same problem if we took a bunch of people who were strictly futurists but no awareness of the past. We'd have the same issue because the two need to go together. When we focus completely on events outside of ourselves, either remembered events in the past or anticipated events in the future, we lose touch with something very important. We lose touch with our inner wisdom. What we have to realize is our inner wisdom may be short on facts, but it is long on intelligence. It really is. It is our inner spiritual awareness that allows us to look at the things that the world accepts as facts and to draw our own conclusions. That's why in my own life, I try to draw conclusions about the past without being attached to it and to anticipate great things in the future without being attached to that either while staying grounded in the present, in this place of spiritual possibility. I mean, the truth is, I don't know how much of the past I've learned is absolutely true about my race, my country, or my own past life. Every time I talk to my mother, it sounds different about my childhood, okay? My memory is good, but I know it's not perfect. And I know that's the same for everyone else. But I have to believe, because I'm in this teaching, that life moves forward. Life moves forward from this point, or as a friend of mine used to say, onward and upward, that's where it goes. So I take the gift of the good memories, and I try to apply it wherever I can. And I take the lessons from the bad memory, and I try not to repeat them any more than I have to. And I have also come to accept that my dreams about the future for me and for the world that I live in, that you live in, may not happen the way I think, and it may not happen on my timeline. But that's okay. Because like all of you, I have a past, and it's over. I have a future, as do you, but it hasn't happened yet. So I know all the power I need is in the exact place and time that I need it, which is right here and right now in the present. That's where I live and move and have my being. That's where my thoughts need to be. That is where everything begins. And for this, I assure you, I am truly grateful, as we all should be. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's just take a moment. A lot of things here may have brought up ideas in your mind, thoughts in your mind. Take the ones that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others. Let's simply know this. We are as powerful in this moment as we ever need to be. There is nothing in my life, nothing in the world that cannot be changed by a new idea. So I recognize that all the things that exist in the world that I wish were not there, all the things, those things in my life that I wish were different, that all of these things can be changed through consciousness. I know that a consciousness of something better creates something better. I know that a consciousness of something deeper and richer creates something just like itself. I know that a consciousness of prosperity creates prosperity. A consciousness of health creates health. And a consciousness of love creates love. My consciousness is not in the past. And it is not in the future. It is now, where I am. As I choose to focus on a greater life, a greater world, a greater me, a greater you, a greater everyone, as I focus on that as the truth begins to reflect the consciousness. That is how the world works, from the inside out. Everything comes from the invisible thought and belief of a person or a group of people, and everything that is created is the invisible becoming visible. So I know now, and I accept for all of us here, that we are creative beings first, and we are creating our life in the way we believe that we can create it. Knowing this, I give thanks for this awareness, and I release this knowing into consciousness, letting it be so for me from this moment on. Please join me in saying, and so it is.